Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Alan Chartok, joined this morning by our old friend Arlo Guthrie. Arlo Guthrie is a music legend whose base is our wonderful Berkshires, and November, as any Thanksgiving reveler knows, is his time of the year. Alice's Restaurant is to Thanksgiving as Bing Crosby is to Christmas. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Arlo, and I know that you're all over the place this year, and it's going to be great. November 13th at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, a great venue. November 14th at Infinity Hall in Hartford. November 16th at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie. And November 22nd at the Mahawi in Great Barrington. And then on top of all of that, Arlo, you'll be at Carnegie Hall, as you always are around this time of the year.
I will be, and it has always been the last show before we take a little break for the holidays, so I'm looking forward to Carnegie. I'm going to miss my old buddy Pete Seeger, obviously, for the first time, because he was with us last year. He was 94 at that time, and we had a great show. So this will be the first time we attempt to do a show there without him somewhere on the planet. But, you know, we've got plans. It's going to be good.
So, Arlo, just remind everybody about how young you were when you got to meet Pete.
Well, you know what? I've met Pete when I was very young. I was probably 3, 4, 5. And we used to go up. My mother would drive my brother and my sister and myself to Pete's house in Peekskill. And I was not a friend of Pete's. You know, I was one of the kids that was told, why don't you kids go out and play together, you know, so the parents could talk. And so we were kicked out. And the time I really got to know him was probably in the early 60s, when I would meet up with him at all the demonstrations that he was at. And he'd be out there for everything. You know, he had this wonderful sort of philosophy that it was better to probably say the wrong thing than to not say anything at all. And so he would show up, and he loved the idea of thousands and thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, saying what was on their mind, whatever it was, about all the things that were changing in the 60s. And I really did inherit that philosophy. I still believe it. I think it's important to get out and say what's on your mind. That's when I met him as a semi-adult.
Do you ever look back, Arlo, on the inspiration that you had to write Alice's Restaurant? In other words, at what point of the game does somebody sit down and say, okay, and of course, it just took everybody by storm. Do you remember thinking, well, I should write a song about this?
Well, it sort of happened incrementally. You know, like, I never sat down with a pen and a piece of paper to write an epic monologue. But piece by piece, things fell into place that made so little sense to me that I needed to laugh about it. And that was the vehicle. It took about a year to put that together. And so I started writing it Thanksgiving of 1965 and finished it somewhere in the spring of 1966. So, you know, it took about 6 months and another 6 months to refine it on stage.
It's just astounding. You made heroes or anti-heroes out of a lot of people. So I've always wanted to ask you this one question. How much of it is true?
Well, all of it is true. I might have embellished a couple of things. For example, the 8x10 colored pictures, they were in black and white.
Was the judge blind?
Yes, of course he was blind. He played himself in the movie later on when the movie came out. That was Judge Hannon. He was from Lee. He was the real judge, and he played himself in the film.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So I didn't make any of that stuff up.
That's great. And Officer Obie, you know, who was the sort of arch villain in the beginning, you and he turned up to have a pretty good relationship later on, yes?
I'll never forget when we started filming Alice's Restaurant. Now it's in the fall of 1968. The record has been out. He's been made the sort of comic arch villain of the area, and but he had a very difficult life.
He
was a good guy. He had a great heart, but he was one of these guys that just, you know, like a cloud followed him around in his personal life, and he never let it show on the street. But we got to meet, and Arthur Penn did something. Arthur Penn, of course, also lived in Stockbridge and was a wonderful, director, and had just finished a movie called Bonnie and Clyde. And when he came to me and said, "Everybody thinks this song is fiction. I know it's true because I know that judge. I know that officer. I mean, I got to make a movie of this." And the first scenes we filmed were Officer Obie and me in at the scene of the crime. And we were still very antagonistic. I mean, because I was a hippie and he was the law. And in those days, it was like oil and water. It didn't mix. And after about a week, 2 weeks of filming, he came to me one morning. And he said, "Arlo, if you hippies can get up at 4 a.m., go through all this wardrobe crap, and work all day until 10 at night, it can't be all that bad." And he had a smile on his face. And we became friends. And we stayed friends until he passed away. I mean, we got closer and closer as the film was being made on a personal level. It was not something that was ever public. It was not anything that ever went beyond the families, you know. And he was a very sweet guy.
On a technical issue, you know, I live within walking distance of your wonderful church, Bring Your Own God Church, the Guthrie Center. and it's just a great institution, and you've done a phenomenal thing. But it's in Great Barrington. So I've often wondered, how come the garbage got thrown out in the Stockbridge dump?
Well, because I lived in Stockbridge. I had a place which they just made a movie about. There was a guy named Jack Swan, who owned a vast tract of land. He was an old Berkshire sort of character, and he had a house that we were renting, and I was there for a few years with, you know, some friends. This was, you know, when you get out of high school, you get together with some friends, you move into the house together to get out from your parents' world, you know. And we were living in Stockbridge. But not only that, I had gone to a summer camp there where my mother was the dance instructor, and that was also in Stockbridge. And I had gone to high school in Stockbridge. So Stockbridge was my stomping grounds. I didn't know much about Great Barrington.
But the church, of course, Alice's Church, Alice and Ray owned it at the time, in Van Dusenville, which is on Division Street in Great Barrington. And so you took that garbage and you went to the dump you were familiar with, and that sort of did it. Was Obie familiar with you before you did that?
No. I had never really run into him, never had much to do, never got in trouble before, and or since. But, he was just a guy in town. I mean, Stockbridge is not a huge town. I don't know if your listeners know, but it's a very, you know, it's basically one street, and it goes for a couple of blocks, and it turns a corner. So the actual tract of land, you know, of Stockbridge is much bigger than the one street nature of it. But I'd probably seen him run around, you know, here and there, but never really got to know him until Thanksgiving of 65.
You have announced that you're going to have a tour to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Alice's Restaurant events. What do you got planned?
Well, here's the thing. I think the older you get, the more room you need to make in your brain to accept new stuff. And so you throw out stuff, and it's often indiscriminate. And one of the things I threw out was the knowledge of the words to Alice's Restaurant. So I have to learn the whole freaking thing again. And my son Abe said, you know, Pop, we can figure this out. We'll put an iPad in front of you. You can learn the whole thing again. And we've planned a year-and-a-half tour, which will be the 50th anniversary, because I can't do it on the road every night. It'd be like living the same half-hour Groundhog Day movie every night of your life, and I would have been in an institution by now if I had done that. But I did promise people I would do it on the occasional anniversaries. Now, I didn't actually think I'd live long enough to have to do the 50th, but here I am. So I'm going to take some time in after Carnegie this year, December. And in January, we start a tour. It'll start in the south. It'll move west, you know, as the weather turns. And eventually we'll be up in New England, and we're going to put Alice back on the menu of the shows.
Well, I've seen you do it, though. I mean, I've been sitting there one time, and, you know, as always, you're great about thinking up new things to do. And I've seen you reach back and do Alice's, so it can't be that you've forgotten it because you've done it.
No, you're wrong. You don't remember, but it was a while back, and it was probably the 40th anniversary, which... You know, that tour lasted 2 years, so it's probably about 8 years ago, and that's what you're remembering.
Well, all I know is that I understand completely what you're saying, because my group, the Berkshire Ramblers, I always sing my song is I'm My Own Grandpa, and somewhere around the fifth verse, I get all flabudget. So you're exactly right. It does catch up with us. But you know an awful lot. How's the family? We love your family. It's been great. We all miss Jackie, your wonderful wife, who's passed on, but how's the family doing?
They're all hanging in there pretty well. You know, my son Abe is playing around the Berkshires with his band. His son is playing up in Vermont and around the Berkshires with his band. All of my girls, I got three girls, and they are all singing and playing and doing other things. And my daughter Annie, who's the middle daughter, is finally putting out her own record, and I'm so excited about that. So the music continues, the traditions continue, all of their kids sing and play. And I love the fact, you know, this was the dream that my father and mother had. They wanted to take all of their kids and tour the country. This is what, aside from all the politics and all the protest stuff and blah, blah, what they really wanted to do was to create a family that went around singing together. And I got to live that dream. And we have, you know, made it so that every once in a while we get together as a whole family and do a series of shows. And but aside from those shows, the kids are all doing their own. And I love that there's a place still in the world for families to play music together. There's nothing quite like it. So the kids are doing their thing. All the kids, the grandkids are doing their stuff. Everybody's hanging in there. We're going to get together probably the day before Thanksgiving to do a private sort of family thing, because on Thanksgiving itself, we will be at the church, you know, feeding people that have nowhere to go and that kind of thing. So we'll be doing that on the actual Thanksgiving, but that whole week before it, we'll all be together.
Well, Arlo Guthrie, truly, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, we love you. You are an inspiration to all of us. You keep carrying on and doing this great work, and I tell you, you're a terrific guy. Again, I want to point out that Arlo Guthrie will be November 13th at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, November 14th at Infinity Hall in Hartford, November 16th at the Bartavon in Poughkeepsie, and November 22nd at the Mahawi in Great Barrington, and then Carnegie Hall. Practice, practice, practice. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Alan. It's always lovely to talk with you, man. Take it easy.